Hello everyone, my name is Elijah David, minister of the 12th Hour Apostolic Sabbatarian Congregation, Mount Zion at the 12th Hour, in the Liberty Hill, Texas. Today is January 28, 2017. The artist Adarwan, 2020. We will start our third service on this high and noon Sabbath with a song entitled Somebody Bigger Than You and I. Who made the mountain? Who made the tree? Who made the river flow to the sea? The who hung the moon in the starry sky? Somebody bigger than you and I. Who makes the flowers bloom in the spring? Who writes the song for the robin to sing? And who sends the rain when the earth is dry? Somebody bigger than you and I. He lights the way when the road is long, keeps you company with love to guide you. He walks beside you just like he walks with me. When I am weary, filled with despair, who gives me courage to go on from there? And who gives me faith that will never die? Somebody bigger than you and I. World Conditions and Yahweh's People Delivered, Part 2, 13 Symbolic Code Number 1 and 2. We're on page 27. Okay, let's finish this up with, it says, speaking of this event, Nahum said, the fir trees shall be terribly shaken, and the trees will fall. What is happening in the shaking that has already commenced in today's world? Some great men have fallen, and it is likely that the reason woman Babylon will be put to rule the world, that the reason that the woman Babylon will be put to rule the world will be due to the trees' rulers having fallen in the shaking that is now only commencing. Okay, so the next chapter of Isaiah, like the preceding chapter, starts with the subject of the fall of Judah, and it also brings in a promise of restoration. We are told that the reason Judah fell was that they trusted in Egypt rather than obey Elohim. Let us continue by reading Isaiah 31:4. It says, for thus saith the Yahweh, for thus hath the Yahweh spoken unto me, like as the lion and the young lion roaring on his prey. When a multitude of shepherds is called forth against him, he will not be afraid of their voice, nor abase himself for the noise of them. So shall the Yahshua the host come down to fight for the Mount Zion and for the hill thereof. Yahweh is not going to be afraid. The Yahshua is not going to be afraid. He's going to come down to fight for the Mount Zion, the kingdom, to restore it. How do we know it is the kingdom? Please turn with me to First Isaiah 1:27-31. Zion shall be redeemed with judgment, and her converts with righteousness, and the destruction of the transgressors and of the sinners shall be together. And they that forsake the Yahweh shall be consumed, for they shall be ashamed of the oaks which ye have desired. And ye shall be confounded, for the gardens which ye have chosen, For ye shall be as an oak whose leaf fadeth, and as a garden that hath no water. And the strong shall be as tow, and the maker of it as a spark, and they shall both burn together, and none shall quench them. That is what happened anciently to Israel and Judah, but what is to happen at the last? Isaiah 2:2, and it shall come to pass in the last days, that the mountain of the Yahweh's house shall be established at the top of the mountains, and shall be exalted by the hills, and all nations shall flow under it. The hill of the Yahweh, then, is the kingdom restored. Let us continue with Isaiah 31:5-6. As birds fly, so will the Yahshua the host defend Jerusalem. Defending also, he will deliver it, and passing over, he will preserve it. Turn ye unto him from whom the children of Israel have deeply revolted. Yahweh is calling for a reformation in a people other than the children of Israel, who have deeply revolted against Yahweh. Isaiah 31:7-8. For in that day every man shall cast away his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which your own hands have made unto you for a sin. Then shall the Assyrian fall with the sword not of a mighty man, and the sword not of a mean man shall devour him. For he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited. Then when this idolatry is cast away by every man, the Assyrian will fall by the sword. And the time when Elohim pleads for the people to return unto him, and when they do it, then the Assyrian will fall. Not before that. It was because of their idolatry that they lost the land, and Elohim is not going to bring his people back to their land with their idolatry. Therefore, we and all of Elohim's people must not delay putting away our idols. We had better cast them out and be ready on time to go to the place where it will be so much better than it is in the present world. For there none will be tired or sick or lonely or afraid. Isaiah 31:8. Then shall the Assyrian fall with a sword, not of a mighty man, and the sword not of a mean man shall devour him. But he shall flee from the sword, and his young men shall be discomfited. For the Assyrian will fall by a sword which Elohim himself shall send. Assyria will not fall by a mean man. His fall will come under circumstances that will clearly show what Yahweh caused it to happen. When ancient Israel fell, it was Elohim who brought it. It was Yahweh who was responsible for it. So it will be also with the Assyrian, unless she, too, turns to the Yahweh. Moreover, it is a vain thing for them to look to some other nation for help. None can stay Elohim's punishment. Only Yahweh can help at such a time. Isaiah 31:9. They shall pass over to the stronghold for fear, and his princes shall be afraid of the ensign, saith the Yahweh. As at the time Yahweh is purifying fire is in Zion, and his purifying furnace is in Jerusalem, the Assyrian will pass over to his stronghold for fear, and his princes shall be afraid of the ensign. From this we can see that Nineveh will not lose out completely when she loses in Palestine. She is to lose out in Palestine first and then flee to her stronghold. This has reference to the time when the kingdom is set up before the scarlet-colored beast comes, before the woman rules the beast. Indeed, this prophecy is talking about Assyria, not Babylon. It shows that Assyria will lose out in the promised land. before she loses her stronghold, her kingdom then is to be established before the complete fall of Assyria takes place. For the kingdom is going to be established, moreover, in Zion and Jerusalem, not in Washington or Mount Carmel. And many peoples and nations shall flow unto it. It will happen just as soon as every man casts away his idols. It is useless to expect it before. As soon as that happens, Assyria will fall in the land. The coming of the kingdom, then, is not waiting for anyone but Elham's own people. Let's return unto Jeremiah and read a few more verses from the chapter we were studying earlier. Jeremiah 31:13. Then shall the virgin rejoice in the dance, both young men and old together, for I will turn their mourning into joy, and will comfort them and make them rejoice from their sorrow. Both old and young will rejoice together. Jeremiah 31:14. And I will satiate the soul of the priest with fatness, and my people shall be satisfied with my goodness, saith the Yahweh. All will be satisfied. Jeremiah 31:15-16. Thus saith Yahweh. A voice was heard in Ramah, lamentation and bitter weeping, Rachel weeping for her children, refused to be comforted for her children because they were not. Thus saith Yahweh, refrain thy voice from weeping and thine eyes from tears, for thy work shall be rewarded, saith Yahweh, and they shall come again from the land of the enemy. This includes all of Yahweh's people, living and dead. Jeremiah 31:17-18. And there is hope in thine end, saith the Yahweh, that thy children shall come again unto their own border. I have surely heard Ephraim bemoaning himself, thus thou hast chastised me, and I was chastised, as a bullock unaccustomed to the yoke. Turn thou me, and I shall be turned, for thou art the Yahweh my Elohim. How different is Ephraim at the time of his deliverance compared with what he was like when he was taken captive? Once he was like a wild bullock, but now he is tame. We have read a number of scriptures here today. Now let us very briefly summarize what we learn from it. We learn, number one, what is the time of Jacob's trouble. Number two, the kingdom will be set up in a time of war. Number three, the whirlwind and sword. War is the evil, the curse that is to be sent unto all the nations unto whom the Yahweh will send it. Number four, the evil war is to go from nation to nation and is not to be of a short duration. Number five, Yahweh's people will be delivered in a time of the great trouble. Number six, they must cast away all idolatry as a prerequisite for being delivered. Number seven, the Gentiles will have their trouble when they are called out of Babylon. Today's study dealt mainly with Jacob's own trouble and about his being delivered from the Assyrian yoke. The great and dreadful day of Yahweh is fast coming. This is number seven. Let us each be ready for it on time, lest we lose out all together. Okay, that ends 13 symbolic code number 1 and 2. Let's now go on into number 3 and 4, entitled The Latter-day Confederacy. It says, This study was given by V.T. Hollis, September the 30th, 1939, and June the 22nd, 1940. Through the prophecy of Isaiah 7-8, we plainly see that Yahweh's people are approaching a time that would demand of them great faith to believe implicitly in Yahweh's word only. Since the experiences which are recorded in the Bible were written for examples, our object lesson for Yahweh's people today, 1 Corinthians 10:11, let us read a few verses from Isaiah 7 and then Isaiah 8, and glean the lesson there may be hidden there for us. Isaiah 7:1, and it came to pass in the days of Ahaz, the son of Jotham, the son of Uzziah, king of Judah, that Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, king of Israel, went up unto Jerusalem to war against it, but he could not prevail against it. This verse, in conjunction with the verses which follow it, reveal that Elohim favored Judah, the two-tribe kingdom, even though at the same time Ephraim, the ten-tribe kingdom, were also his people. The reason he favored Judah in this instance was that their brethren, Ephraim, had joined heathen forces to fight against Judah. Therefore, Elohim could not bless Ephraim's endeavor. Through this experience, we should gain the lesson as Christians that Elohim will not bless the endeavors of any of his people when they join heathen forces in order to gain strength in their effort to overcome their brethren. And Yahshua, whom for some reason they wish to have put out of their way. Such an alliance cannot prosper. Isaiah 7:2, and it was told the house of David, saying, Syria is confederate with Ephraim. And his heart was moved, and the heart of his people, as the trees of the wood are moved with the wind. The people of Judah were afraid. How would we feel if a like experience should befall us now? What would sustain us through it? Yahweh again would be the only hope of his people. And Isaiah 7:3-9. Then said the Yahweh unto Isaiah, go forth now to meet Ahaz, thou and Shur Jashub, thy son. But at the end of the conduit of the upper pool and the highway of the fuller field, and say unto him, take heed and be quiet, fear not, neither be faint-hearted, for the two tails of these smoking firebrands, for the fierce anger of Rezin with Syria, and of the son of Remaliah, because Syria, Ephraim and the son of Remaliah have taken evil counsel against thee, saying, let us go up against Judah and vex it, and let us make a breach therein for us, and sit a king in the midst of it, even the son of Tabeel. Thus saith the Yahweh Elohim, it shall not stand, neither shall it come to pass. For the head of Syria is Damascus, and the head of Damascus is Rezin, and within 65 years shall Ephraim be broken, that it be not a people, and the head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Remaliah's son. If you will not believe, surely you shall not be established. Elohim is here telling Judah that they should not fear this alliance because he was not sponsoring it. Israel and Syria were dependent on nothing greater than their kings and the capitals of their nation. Judah was instructed to depend on Elohim's word, which declared that these allied powers would fail to overcome them. Moreover, Judah was told, if you will not believe, surely you shall not be established. And now this Judah today would be Gilead Center, the last church that I came out of at the Kermit, Texas in 2003. I was with that for 33 years. And they certainly didn't believe. They had the message. They were told to believe. The prophet preached going back to Israel and taking charge of Jerusalem and the land. He preached that, but he really didn't believe it. The whole congregation fell in disbelief on that, except myself, my wife, and one other, Alan DeLong. But anyway, says, in other words, Judah was told that if they did not believe that Elohim was telling them, they would lose out. Their survival, therefore, was wholly conditional on their complete belief in Elohim's promise, only that the alliance formed against them would fail. The day is coming when you and I, too, must depend entirely on Elohim's word. But unless we know what Elohim's word is, it is impossible for us to believe him. Isaiah 8:9, associate yourselves, O ye people, and ye shall be broken in pieces, and give ear, O ye of far countries. Gird yourselves, and ye shall be broken in pieces. Yahweh here is challenging a move toward a federation of nations. With World War I, we began to hear serious proposals for the Association of Nations into a single league. Today, the proposal is revived, and efforts are being made toward forming a strong and workable Union of Nations. Instead, not only is the idea of the International Federation growing more and more prevalent, but in the minds of many great men, there is the one positive conviction that the successful continuance of their nation's way of life is utterly dependent upon the closest association and cooperation of all those nations which share their way of life. The warning given in this chapter unto nations and peoples is not to associate and gird themselves or take counsel together, as it would only come to naught. There may be some significance in the repetitions of the warning. If so, it would indicate that either two or possibly three attempts would be made among nations to associate and gird themselves, and it would only end in complete failure. If there should come yet be another attempt, and there be involved a war against Judah, the Judah, having no adequate means of defense among themselves, will have to let Yahweh be their means of deliverance. In Isaiah 8:10, take counsel together, and it shall come to naught. Speak the word, and it shall not stand. For Yahweh is with us. Yahweh's people take a strong and independent attitude because they believe that Yahweh is with them. Most human beings are somewhat like Peter. We have great faith until we meet face to face a trial, or when the trial here prophesied comes, though Elohim's people must know that Yahweh is with them, and they must firmly stand on His side. Through this verse, we are made to understand the real reason for the certain failure of the nations in their attempt to obviate the fulfillment of their fears. Yahweh is not with them. It becomes distinctly apparent. Therefore, that it is the pressing duty of every Elohim fearing country and individual sincerity to seek Yahweh's will and be with Him if we are to survive and prosper. Isaiah 8:11-12. For the Yahweh spake this unto me with a strong hand, and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of this people, saying, Say ye not a confederacy unto all them unto whom this people shall say a confederacy. Neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. Elam people are not only commanded not to participate in the confederacy, but they are to oppose it. To all them unto whom this people shall say a confederacy, neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. It is upon the root of some fear that the confederacy is formed, but that which constitutes their fear is not to constitute the fear of Elohim's people. Isaiah 8:13, Sanctify the Yeshua of the host himself, and let him be your fear, and let him be your dread. Yahweh alone is to be revered. Yahweh alone is to be feared and dreaded. If there were no possibility for fear at the fulfillment of this chapter, there would be no need for this reassurance and instruction. It is indicative of the fact that Elohim's people will see themselves absolutely helpless, and they will appear helpless unto all others. Then they will receive deliverance from Yahweh, and all will behold it. Elohim's people are approaching the time when they must either confederate or sacrifice their lives. They must be developing that faith which will cause them to believe that in those days shall men seek death and shall not find it, and shall desire to die, and death shall flee from them. Revelation 9:6. Isaiah 8:14. And he shall be for a sanctuary, but for a stone of stumbling, and for a rock of offense unto both the houses of Israel, for a gin and for a snare unto the inhabitants of Jerusalem. A sanctuary is a place of refuge, besides being a place of refuge unto Elohim's faithful ones. He is also to be a rock of offense unto both the houses of Israel, Judah and Israel, and a gin and a snare unto the inhabitants of Jerusalem. Jerusalem was the ruling city of Judah. From this it is plain that through this confederacy, Elohim is to be a gin and a snare unto the antipical Judah. Isaiah 8:15. And many among them shall stumble and fall and be broken and be snared and be taken. This prophecy declares that the confederacy will be a snare, a trap, and that many will fall and be taken in it. It will be a fearful trap and will separate Elohim's people. Thus is Yahweh going to test all his people and let them reveal just how much faith each of them has. In the face of this warning, we must make the necessary preparation so that we will not fall into the snare. Elohim has clearly forewarned his people so that they will not be taken by surprise. In Isaiah 24, we are told that there would be a shaking as of an olive tree, and but few men would be left. The confederacy that we are studying this afternoon commences before the loud cry and before the slaughter of Ezekiel 9, and that takes place in the Seventh-day Adventist Church. I added that part. It is not the image of the beast, for this association precedes the image of the beast. And the confederacy is formed when the nations are girding themselves for war. Put another way, the confederacy will commence after the seeding and perhaps just before the slaughter of Ezekiel 9. Moreover, it is in the time when the Christian nations are united that the woman Babylon will sit on the seven heads, Revelation 17:9, depicting also the union of the churches under Babylon. All those who are not expecting the confederacy, but instead are expecting next year a reassertion of the Roman church supremacy or the Battle of Armageddon or something else, are going to fall into this snare, for they will appear to to them harmless, for it will appear unto them harmless and perhaps even a good thing, but it will be their trap. Isaiah 8:16-18. Bind up the testimony, seal the law among my disciples, and I will wait upon Yahweh that hideth his face from the house of Jacob, and I will look for him. Behold, I and the children whom the Yahweh hath given me are for signs and for wonders in Israel from the Yahweh of hosts, which dwelleth in Mount Zion. Someone will have faith. Elham does not mean by this that he is keeping his blessings away from Jacob, but it shows that though we cannot see his face, we can witness his power. Isaiah 8:19. And when they shall say unto you, seek unto them that have familiar spirits, and unite unto witches that peep and that murder, should not a people seek unto their Elohim for the living unto the dead? This shows that the world is going spiritualistic. Isaiah 8:20. Unto the law and the testimony. If they speak not according to this word, it is because there's no light in them. This does not mean that they are devils, but rather they are in the darkness. When they learn the truth, then they shall speak according to the law and the testimony of Yahshua. Isaiah 8:21-22. And they shall pass through it, hardly be stead and hungry. And it shall come to pass that when they shall be hungry, they shall fret themselves and curse their king and their Elohim, and look upward, and they shall look unto the earth, and behold trouble and darkness, dimness and anguish, and they shall be driven unto darkness. All right, that looks like that's the end of number three and four, symbolic code number 13. These are short codes. Let's go right on end to 13, symbolic code number 5 and 6. It talks about the observance of the Sabbath. It says the Sabbath is a golden class that unites Elohim and his people, but the Sabbath command has been broken. Yahweh's only day has been desecrated. The Sabbath has been torn from its place by the man of sin, and a common working day has been exalted in its stead. A breach has been made in the law, and this breach is to be repaired. For the true Sabbath is to be exalted unto its rightful position as Yahweh's rest day. And the 58th chapter of Isaiah is outlined the work that the Elohim's people are to do. They are to magnify the law and make it honorable, to build up the old waste places, and to raise up the foundations of many generations. Unto those who do not to do this work, Elohim says, thou shalt be called the repairer of the breach, the restorer of paths to dwell in, if thou turn away thy foot from the Sabbath, from doing thy pleasure on my holy day, and call the Sabbath a delight, the holy of Yahweh honorable. Thou shalt honor him not doing thine own ways, nor finding thine own pleasure, nor speaking thine own words. Then shalt thou delight thyself in Yahweh, and I will cause thee right upon the high places of the earth, and feed thee with the heritage of Jacob thy father, for the mouth of Yahweh has spoken it. Verse 12-14. The Sabbath question is to be the issue in the great final conflict in which all the world will act a part. Men have honored Satan's principles above the principles that rule in the heavens. They have accepted the spurious Sabbath, which Satan has exalted as a sign of his authority. But Elohim has set his seal upon his royal requirement. Each Sabbath institution bears the name of its author, the ineffaceable mark that shows the authority of each. It is our work to lead the people to understand this. We are to show them that it is of the vital consequence whether they bear the mark of Elohim's kingdom or the mark of the kingdom of rebellion. For they acknowledge themselves subjects of the kingdom whose mark they bear. Elohim has called us to uplift the standard of his downtrodden Sabbath. How important then that our example in keeping and Sabbath keeping should be right. Testimonies, Volume 6, page 351. From time to time, questions have come into this office regarding various important aspects of the Sabbath. Before his death, Brother Hardiff prepared material in question and answer form for a tract dealing with the subject of the Sabbath. Since it was never published, and since it is important that we have a thorough understanding of the Sabbath tract, the Code takes pleasure in introducing a series of questions and answers articles taken from the tract material. The question to be discussed in this issue is the Sabbath. What is it? When is it? Or from whom is it? Or for whom is it? A true seeker writes, I am sending you literature on the seemingly scriptural doctrine that the Bible Sabbath falls on Friday, not on Saturday nor on Sunday. It looks to me unanswerable. Please give me a strictly biblical answer. Searching examination by heaven's all-revealing microscope. The Spirit and Word discovers the Friday Sabbath literature to erect the entire structure of its doctrine on Exodus 16, verse 1 and 2, which its author terms the keys to Yahweh's week. And so, if under heaven's own microscope, his position proves to be solidly and securely footed, in fact, then the doctrine is to be reverently accepted. But if such examination of the position proves it untenable, then it should be dismissed, since the position is based on Exodus 16:1-12. We quote those verses. And they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month, after departing out of the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation, after departing out of the land of Egypt, and the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness, and the children of Israel said unto them, would to Yahweh we have died by the hand of Yahweh in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread unto the full. For we have brought us forth, for ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then said Yahweh unto Moses, behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily. And Moses and Aaron said unto all the children of Israel, ye shall know that the Yahweh hath brought you out from the land of Egypt. And in the morning, then ye shall see the glory of Yahweh, for that he heareth your murmurings against Yahweh. And what are we that ye murmur against us? And Moses said, this shall be when the Yahweh shall give you in the evening flesh to eat, and in the morning bread to the full, for that the Yahweh heareth your murmurings, which you murmur against him. And what are we? Your murmurings are not against us, but against the Yahweh. And Moses spake unto Aaron, and say unto all the congregation of the children of Israel, come near before the Yahweh, for he hath heard your murmurings. And it came to pass, as Aaron spake unto the whole congregation of the children of Israel, that they looked toward the wilderness, and behold, the glory of the Yahweh appeared in the cloud. And Moses spake unto Moses, saying, I have heard the murmurings of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, at even you shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread. You shall know I am the Yahweh your Elohim, Exodus 16:1-12. On these verses, the Friday Sabbath author's featured thoughts are presented in the following 14 quoted paragraphs. we are also given the divine connection or the true relationship of Elohim's days and Yahweh's months in the 16th chapter of Exodus. Yahweh proved the children of Israel, which each day of the week was by the falling of the manna. The first manna fell on the 16th day of the second month, the day after the 15th. See Exodus 16:1-22. This marked the first day of the Bible week, creation week. Now, the 16th day of the second month of Elohim's year, as is shown elsewhere in this study, is now called Saturday. Under the Roman name, the second day on which the manna fell is now called Sunday, and the third day is called Monday, and the fourth day is called Tuesday, and the fifth day is called Wednesday, and the sixth day or preparation day is called Thursday, and the seventh day on which no manna fell is now called Friday. This same relationship was maintained from creation, for we see there that the first time the moon ever registered time, which would be the first day of the month, was on the fifth day of the week. Genesis 1:14-18. See, it says first day was on the fifth day of the week. Well, no, it's actually on the fourth day. So, okay, it says, now carefully read and review about the departure of the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. Exodus 12. You will find that they were instructed to keep the Passover, Abib 14, in Egypt, and then leaving on the following day, Abib 15. Leviticus 23, 5 and 6, Numbers 33, 2 and 3. But we have a mistake right here, right from the beginning, because the Passover wasn't kept on the 15th. It was set, on the 14th. And the Passover lamb was cut out on the 10th day, and on the 14th day it was sacrificed, it was killed, and the preparations were made ready to start eating at the going down of the sun on the 5th, which would be the 15th day. So the 14th connection up with the 15th day, the preparation was on the 14th day. Okay, we can understand the wisdom of Yahweh in giving the children of Israel his true time, for he was showing them important feast days to keep, and as we will soon see, he was going to give them his laws to keep. According to Numbers 33, 2 and 3, the children of Israel departed out of the land of Egypt on the 15th day of the first month, Abib. It was in the wanderings of the children of Israel that Elohim performed one of the greatest of all Bible miracles, the falling of the manna. Have you passed this scripture over as being only a miraculous feeding of the children of Israel to keep them from starving to death? Yahweh had a deeper purpose according unto Exodus 16:3. Yahweh's purpose to prove whether they will walk in my law or no. There is now standing a date given in Exodus, Exodus 16:1, and they took their journey from Elam, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elam and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after departing out of the land of Egypt. 2.5 or 3 million people had been on this journey for 30 days, and all the provisions they brought had evidently been consumed, and their condition became so desperate on this particular 15th day of the second month, Ziph, refer to calendar, that the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron. They would rather have died at the hand of the Yahweh in Egypt, Exodus 16:2-3. But on that same 15th day, Elohim made a promise through Moses, saying, Exodus 16:12, I have heard the murmurs of the children of Israel. Speak unto them, saying, at evening you shall eat flesh, and in the morning you shall be filled with bread, and you shall know that I am the Yahweh your Elohim. Now the first morning after the 15th would be the morning of the 16th, the first day that manna fell in the wilderness. It is declared to us clearly that this is the first day of the week. For Exodus 16:22 says, They get it every morning for 6 days. Also see Exodus 16:26. So let us count. Manna fell first on the 16th day of the second month, Sif, or the first day of the bottle week. 17th, the second day of the week. 18th, the third day of the week. 19th, the fourth day of the week. 20th, the fifth day of the week. 21st, sixth day of the week. And twice as much manna fell. On the 22nd, there was none that fell, for this was the seventh day of the week, or the holy Sabbath of creation. Exodus 16:23-30. This teaches us, as it taught them, the true seven-day cycle or Baba week, so we can truly connect together Elohim's Baba week. Day of week, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Month of Zif, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22. Elohim's 7th day of Sabbath is called Friday on Roman Gregorian calendar. Referring once more to the calendar, we use the key week and find that we can trace forward or backward, tracing backward. We find that the first day of the first month of the first year of a three-year cycle comes on the fifth day of Yahweh's week. This new moon showing the first day of the first year of the cycle always comes in on the day that the Roman calendar calls Wednesday. Actually, Elohim's day begins on the previous evening in the regards to Tuesday evening. Roman time, according unto the scriptures, Genesis 1:23. Since Wednesday is the day of the new moon, and the new moon comes on the fifth day of Elohim's week, then we can safely say that the sixth day falls on Thursday, and the seventh day Sabbath of Elohim's week is called Friday Roman time. A Bible day is from sunset to sunset. Thursday sunset to Friday sunset is actually Elohim's Sabbath. Yahweh's calendar, page 3 and 7. These comments by the Friday Sabbath author on Exodus 16:1-12 reveal that his position has as its basis the assumption that there is unbroken chronological continuity between the event of Exodus 16:1 and the events of Exodus 16:2-16. For the reason is such as to make it appear that in the evening of the 15th day, the day that the Israelites arrived in the wilderness of Sin, the quail came up, and that in the morning of the next day, the 16th, the manna fell. Upon this key premise, the Friday Sabbath doctrine is built, and thereupon it must stand or fall. Let us therefore prayerfully scrutinize it through the all-searching lens of the Spirit of the Truth and the Word itself. Close analysis of the scripture record, Exodus 16, under consideration reveal that the only day of the month inspiration names is the 15th, the day of the Exodus arrival in the wilderness of Sin, Exodus 16:1. The scripture does not name the day or the month upon which Israel murmured, and it does not name the month or the day upon which the manna first fell, nor the day upon which the quail came up. These facts became absolutely evident when it is noted that not all the time elements of Exodus 16:2-12 are chronological or immediately connected with those of Exodus 16:1. The verse which deals with the day of Israel's arrival in the wilderness of Sin, verse 2, to 12 and on to 35 briefly recount only the most significant aspect of the most significant experiences which befell them during their 40 years sojourn in the wilderness. 2, these verses make it equally evident that none of the events they recount took place on the days immediately following the Exodus arrival in the wilderness of Sin. Any careful comparison of the records will bear out that the events in point cover a considerable period of time and that there is a gap in time between Exodus 16:1 Exodus 16:2. Also that chronologically, even the events of Exodus 17 come between the events of Exodus 16, verse 1 and 2. The fact is that aside from stating the day of the month, the Exodus arrived in the wilderness through the 15th, the record does not name any other day at all in connection with either the falling of the manna or the coming of the quail. But simply points out that the one came in the evening of an unrecorded day and the other in the morning of an unrecorded day. Furthermore, and again contrary to the theory, the manna came first and the quail came days later, as we shall now see. Since the book of Numbers, chapter 11, records the manna and the quail events in greater detail than does Exodus 16, we shall briefly examine the account as given there. We remember the fish, which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons, and the leeks, and the onions, and the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all besides this manna before us, Numbers 11, 5 and 6. Being displeased with their murmurings over the manna, the Yahweh commanded Moses, "Say thou unto the people, sanctify yourselves against tomorrow, and you shall eat flesh. You shall not eat one day, nor 2 days, nor 5 days, neither 10 days, nor 20 days, but even a whole month until it come out at your nostrils, and it be a loathsome unto you." Numbers 11:18-20. It says these and the preceding verses of the chapter definitely disclose that the quail came after Israelites murmured against the manna, and that after they lost taste for it, they became the more quarrelous because of their unbelief in Yahweh's ability to provide fresh food for such a great multitude. To their surprise, though, there went forth a wind from the Yahweh and brought quails from the sea, and let them fall by the camp, as it were a day's journey on this side, and as it were a day's journey on the other side, round about the camp, and as it were 2 cubits high upon the face of the earth. And the people stood up all that day, and all that night, and all the next day, and they gathered the quail. He that gathered least gathered 10 homers, and they spread them all abroad for themselves round about the camp. And while the flesh was yet between their teeth, ere it was chewed, the wrath of Yahweh was kindled against the people, and Yahweh smote the people with a very great plague. Numbers 11:31-33. These verses of scriptures bring forth the firm fact that the quail did not come ahead of the manna. Numbers 11:1-9, 13, 18-23, 31-33. And that they were there not for just one evening, but rather for at least 2 days, Numbers 11:32. This is proof in the absolute that the day of Israel's arrival, the 15th day in the wilderness of sin, Exodus 16:1, was not the day the quail came, as the Friday Sabbath author supposes it to be. It is surprising, too, that he has failed to note that it was not in Yahweh's purpose to feed his people with flesh at all during the 40 years. No one could imagine that he was capricious to give them meat to eat right at the start, then abruptly to take it away from them and to put them on manna instead. Moreover, had such been the case, then such rather than the contrary would have been the record. Also, it is understandable that just as soon as they saw that there was no way of making a living in the wilderness, they faithlessly envisaged themselves reduced to want, poverty, starvation, and death, and straightway began to recriminate Moses over their fear, anticipated lot, and to cry out bitterly for sustenance, for food of any kind rather than for a special kind. Being pitiful of their fears and mindful of their needs, the Yahweh sent them bread, manna from heaven. Exodus 16:4. Soon, though, They tired of the manna and began to murmur anew in lust for flesh food that was not for their good. Thus it was that, though contrary to his wise purpose for them, the Yahweh sent them quail, Exodus 16:8. Still though, the manna, as usual, fell the next morning. So they then had both bread and flesh to feast. Oh yeah, flesh to the fatal full, Exodus 16:12-13, Numbers 11:31-33. Yea, solemnly affirms, the psalmist, they spake against Yahweh. They said, can Yahweh furnish a table in the wilderness? Behold, he smote the rock that the waters gushed out and the streams overflowed. Can he give bread also? Can he provide flesh for his people? Psalm 78:19-20. This brings a close us at this hour. Contact us at the 11th hour call. That's number 11. Click on our audio archive. We're going to close now with a song. Wonder of wonder, in heaven I see a song that I've written, Elijah Davis. Matchless love from heaven come down. Let me tell you a story about a long time ago, of a prophecy made for the future to unfold. About a man named Joshua who came to his own, to live and to die and to reign on his throne. He showed deliverance from all manner of sin. He touched the heartstrings of men where they live. And within every judgment he had power to forgive. Wonder of wonder in heaven I should. Heavenly light shining all around me. Glory of glory in heaven. With love from heaven come down. He taught the plan of salvation by faith, long on mercy and full of grace. He blazed the trail to glory, you see, through the blood of the Lamb of Calvary. Shining all around me. Glory of glory in heaven is found. Oh, matchless love from heaven come down.